Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Peggy Martin, and I'm an alcoholic. And through the grace of God and fellowship of people like you and sponsorship, I have been sober since February the 4th, 1964. And for that, I am very grateful. I want to thank you guys for asking me out here and letting you know this. You know, I often forget to say this, and it's kind of dumb because I'm kind of a seat-of-the-pants type speaker. I never know what you're going to get because I never know what I'm going to get. I never know how it's going to come out. But this group has been so important to so many groups in the country. I don't know if you know that, and I don't know if you even care, really. But I'm telling you that it has been important to our group in Bellevue, Nebraska. And Bellevue, you know, where the hell is Bellevue, Nebraska? Well, it's in the middle of Nebraska, which is in the middle of the country. And we have a group there that meets on Tuesday night, which we pattern very much after the Pacific group. There are many of you in this group that have literally saved my life. If not directly, then through the spoken word. And I want to thank you, because I don't fit AA into my life. AA is my life. And there's a big difference. And I think a lot of times those of us who've been sober for a long time forget that. I have a sponsor. I go to at least 4 meetings a week. I sponsor people. Why should I quit doing what has been successful for me for almost 25 years? And yet there is something in my head as the alcoholic, my little alcoholic man, and I don't know why he's a man and who cares, but I think it's rather deserved, as a matter of fact. But this little alcoholic man says to me, "Why do you have to sponsor all these ninnies? I mean, they're twerps. They're not like you were when you got sober. Thank God they weren't like that." And then he says, "Why do you have to go to all these meetings? I mean, can't they make coffee sometimes or what? Why do you have to take this commitment? Why do you have to do that?" And I get this mind chatter. To this day, I'm sober 24 years, and you think alcoholism isn't a disease? I mean, I am diseased in a, you know, I get these things that are going in my head, you know? Don't you have conversations with yourself? I'm lucky to keep it down to 2 people sometimes. I'm going, you know, but let me tell you what happened one time. I was up in San Jose speaking, and Karen was there, and some of the other people, and they know what this. And I have a terrible problem with ego. I'm sure none of the other old-timers in the group have a terrible problem with ego. Oh, heavens, no. But I have a bad problem with my ego. I'm up there, and I've been asked to speak at this thing, and I had always heard that Southern California conventions were big. But I didn't know Northern California conventions were big, too. I thought they were more, you know, small, 1,800. So I thought, well, it won't be so bad. Well, all these people just kept coming and coming and coming, and I'm supposed to speak on Saturday night. And I'm beginning to hum. You know how we hum? Do you ever hum in your mind? Somebody says to you, you know, where are you going? What'd you say? You know, you just, it's just, leave me alone, I gotta worry, you know, I gotta worry about this thing. I'm scared, you know, and I'm sitting there and I gotta go get dressed. And I get dressed and I'm wearing this yellow silk dress. This is my speaking dress, you know, I'm wearing a speaking dress because I'm hot shot, right? I gotta wear this yellow silk dress. So I'm sitting out and we're watching this great play called Susie the South. I don't know if any of you have ever seen it or not. Susie the South. And you sit in this amphitheater outside. And we're sitting on grass, and I'm worried. I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to have a green butt from sitting on the grass, you know, because I had this yellow silk dress on. And I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to pay attention to this play, Susie the South, because I'm still humming, I'm still scared, and all these people keep coming. All of a sudden, I feel something wet land on my hand. And then this little girl that's sitting next to me is kind of a fuss budget anyway, and she goes, ooh, ooh, ooh. And I look over here, and this bird has crapped all over my dress. Just, you know, I have this big blob up here on my shoulder, you know. Now, I don't know if you understand this or not, but suddenly everything was just okay. God sent Bill Wilson this wind and these bright lights. He sent Moses burning bushes. To me, he sends little birds. Do you understand what I'm saying? He doesn't send me these. He sends me little tiny spiritual experiences. Little human spiritual experiences, like birds, you know, who put me at my ease because this is my life. How important am I really? I mean, I am a toilet for a bird. And I'm worried about getting up in front of people and speaking? This is my life. I feel a lot better now. I want to thank Clancy. I love Clancy. And Clancy always keeps me on my toes anyway. And I love him. And thank you, wherever you are, for asking me to come and speak. I've been thinking a lot about my childhood lately. This is a personal aside, and I hope I don't offend anybody, but it's your problem if I do. I have thought a lot about my childhood lately, but I am really very tired of Alcoholics Anonymous being merely a resting place on the way to ACA. I'm sorry, I mean, if you don't agree, that's fine, but I really feel that this is my life. This place is my life. And I really feel if I am doing my job, if I am working in my program, if I am doing the things that I need to be doing within it, then I don't feel different. If I'm not doing the things that I need to be doing, then I'm going to feel different. I'm going to feel that I need something special or more. But I have thought about being I was a mean little child. I was thinking about this the other day, and I've told many stories about my childhood, but I had not remembered this one. One of the things that I had done was, I don't know if you had any siblings, but I had a sister who lived in with me, and she was kind of a little sissy, sort of. And I was, are you a mass of contradictions to this day? I know that I am a mass of contradictions. I'll try to remember to talk about that. But she was always so lovely and so blonde and so sweet, and I told her that there was a boogeyman under the bed. And that he ate feet. And that, I probably scarred her childhood because she would not get out of bed without looking underneath the bed to see if there was anything under there. And just to show you how goofy I was, I got to believe in it myself. And I had made up the foot monster, you know, and I got to thinking maybe there was one under my bed too. And I would look down, you know, lean over before you get out of bed and go on. There's a lot of kids don't like to leave their feet hanging out of bed. And I don't know why that is, but I wasn't around any of them. I didn't affect them, but I did affect her. And she was really sweet. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I was driving into South Omaha. South Omaha, there's a lot of pickups and cowboy boots and cowboy hats and shotguns and stuff like that, you know, it's kind of redneck. Well, my whole area is kind of redneck. I mean, I love them, you know, they're my people. But I'm driving along in my little Chevy station wagon, and I have got Paco Bell's Canon. And I don't know if any of you know what that is, but it's a classical piece of classical music blaring on my stereo. And I have the windows rolled up, you know, and I'm like a teenager going along through South Omaha, through Waylon Jennings country, you know, with this stereo blaring, just singing and, you know, just grooving and getting into this stuff. And it put me in the mind that, you know, I'm on the one hand, I love classical music. On the other hand, I love Jimi Hendrix. You know what I'm saying? On the one hand, you know, I judge you, and I look at you, and I say you're not doing these things. I mean, you irritate me, and on the other hand, I say I want you to love me. On the one hand, I say that I'm belligerent, and that I strike out at people, and that I'm an upfront person, I'm extroverted, and on the other hand, I say to you, I'm shy. And on the one hand, I think I'm angry, and it really turns out I'm afraid. So we are a mass of contradictions. And this stained glass back here reminded me when I was sitting looking at it earlier, what a life-saving thing this Alcoholics Anonymous is. What an absolutely life-saving thing it is. because it's very much like the story of the little guy who had his father was at home from work, and they were going to go to, he promised this child that he would take him to McDonald's. And the child kept bugging him and bugging him, and the father was trying to finish some task, and he couldn't finish it. So he found a magazine, and he got the magazine, and there was a big picture of a map of the world in this magazine. So he tore this out, and he cut it into pieces, and he jumbled them all up, and he gave the pieces to the child, and he said, "Now, go put the map of the world together. And when you're through with that, we can go to McDonald's." And he thought, "That'll take the kid at least 15, 20, 30 minutes to put this together. I'll get my task finished, we can go." And in 5 minutes, the kid is back and it's put together. And the father said, "How in the world did you ever do that?" He said, "Daddy, there was a picture of a man on the other side. I put the man together and the world came together. I put the man together and the world came together." Isn't that what Alcoholics Anonymous does for us? It's done that for me. It has put my world, it has enabled me where when I drank, my world came together and then it all fell apart. Because I never could sustain that. And I came to you and my life was in pieces. And you helped me put it back together. In such a short period of time, relatively speaking. In such a short period of time. I drank, basically, because it changed my whole world. You know, it changed the way I felt about things. It changed the way I saw things. I mean, I was skinny. I never had a figure. I was kind of like Karen. You know, Karen's real skinny. You know, she looks like an exclamation point to me. And it's just, but she does. She's always been skinny and just so nervous, you know. I mean, she's just a bundle of energy. She's what wears me out almost. But, you know, that's the way I kind of looked. And I never really thought very much about that. But when I would drink, you know, my waist would nip in and my hips would flare out and my boobs would grow, you know. And I had these big boobs and I never had them before. And then I'd get sober and they'd go away. They'd shrink and die, you know. And my mother always told me, "Well, when you get married, you know, and you have children, they'll grow." She lied, you know. They never did. I never have had any. I've had to deal with that in reality. There's a lot of things about me I've had to deal with in reality that I never had to deal with when I was drinking because I could make them different. It made them seem different. And I was not one of these people who went next door to borrow a cup of sherry and just got the vapors and came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I drank a quart of pop-off 80-proof vodka a day and smelled like a sour potato most of the time. But I was sick, and Karen took me all the way to Pasadena last night. We're looking for Lookout Mountain. We're in Pasadena on the flat, you know, because we got lost. We were talking about our cirrhosis of the liver. Only two alcoholics could be talking about cirrhosis of the liver and stomach taps and driving the freeways in Los Angeles. It's crazy. It's insane. But anyway, I had cirrhosis of the liver. I drank my way through Europe. I went to school in Europe. I drank my way through college. I was driving through the UCLA campus today, and I said, "That's Murphy Hall." I had come to Murphy Hall years and years ago to get some credit straightened out because I had gone to school over in Europe. And I got some credit straightened out at Murphy Hall in the administration building there before they built all of that stuff. And it's like I could remember that. I was not in good shape. I was out of my mind when I was here, but I remembered that. I remember drinking in Southern California down in Redlands. I lived in Redlands for a number of years. I did not get sober in Southern California. I was very, very drunk. I ended up coming to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1964 because I had no place else to go. I physically was just absolutely a wreck. I did have portal cirrhosis of the liver. I was 25 years old. I looked like a bloated frog. I mean, I just was so unlovely. And I came here I don't know if you rushed into Alcoholics Anonymous and said, "This is the place for me. This, I am home." I did not want to be with you. I absolutely did not want to be with you. And I had absolutely no question that I was not going to stay. I just came because the heat was on. And how many times have we heard that? I came because the heat was on. And I thought, "I'll stay here just long enough to get the heat off and then I'll do what I want to do. I'll just do what I want to do." And I came and you got your hooks into me. And I don't know how you did that. But I know that I got a sponsor, and I know that I came to a lot of meetings, and she made me to be greeter. And I said to her, and I, you know, she always frightened me, and I said to her, you know, I don't want to be greeter, because you got to understand, I don't like people, and I don't want to greet people. And she said, I don't care what you want, and I don't care what you like, you stick out your hand, and you say, welcome to the friendship group. That was the name of my group, ironically, the friendship group. I was made greeter at the friendship group, and I would greet people like this, welcome to the friendship group. Welcome to the friendship group. Welcome to the friendship group. And you know, I got to like it. And I, don't you know how, did you ever get a job in a group, you know, and just when you're getting to like it, they put you on something else, they take it away from you, give it to somebody else, and you, God, it's like a demotion, you know. I was put on ashtrays the second time around. I mean, I wasn't even greeter anymore. Then I wanted to be greeter. And then after I got off ashtrays, I wanted to be on, you know, I wanted to be back on ashtrays. And oh, it's crazy, but it kept me sober. And oh, God, aren't we special? Aren't we absolutely special in that we have this thing? This is a big, frightening world. It is way beyond my comprehension. And here we have some place where we can come, where people really care. And do you know that 90% of the world out there really don't have that? And sometimes I take that so much for granted. I just think that's the way it ought to be. But this is the one place that I could come, and I came for many years, understanding that people did care. You know, my problem has never been that I couldn't detach. You know, Al-Anons have a lot of trouble detaching from us. They love us to death sometimes. I've never had trouble detaching. My problem has always been to attach. Do you understand what I'm saying? To allow someone to love me. You know, it's hard for me to give. But God, sometimes it's even harder for me to receive. You ever have trouble saying thank you for a compliment? Just thank you, no qualifications? Not, oh, this old rag. I had difficulty. I had difficulty saying thank you. I had difficulty saying I'm wrong. It's stuck in my throat like Fonzie, you know. He said, whoa, 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 like that, you know. I was, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's the way I was for many years. I was, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I would let people in for a very short period of time, and I was very nervous. Very, very nervous. I mean, I was a very quick alcoholic. It just did not take me long to respond to anything. Like door slamming, I would just like that. Did you? And loud noises. It was just horrible, you know. And there's a whole faction of people now who've come into Alcoholics Anonymous who are like 30 and under that I call glue heads, you know. And they are alcoholic as I am, but they've also smoked a little dope, and they get this resin caught up in these neurons in their head, you know. And whereas we just, you know, when our neurons get fried, they get fried. The ends of them go. You know, and we sort of short-circuit our brain and get fried. You know how we say we're fried? Glue heads get glued, you know. They just, these little neurons get glued back, and they're just wonderful to deal with, you know. Whereas I, you know, my sponsor would say to me, go to a meeting, and I would go, go to a meeting, God, you know, it's just a crisis just to even think about getting the bus to a meeting or anything, you know. Oh, it's a decision, I got to make a decision. Glue heads, you say to them, you know, go to a meeting, it goes, boom, boom, just like this, and they go, ah, ah. Awesome. Now, what meeting was that you were talking about, Mama? You know, it's wonderful. And I love dealing with that. I love sponsoring people. I love being in touch with you, because every time I'm in touch with you, you take a brick away from my wall. You, even today, God, let me never forget this. Today I've been sober 24 years, almost 25 years. Let me never, ever forget that I need to be teachable. Please don't ever let me think I know it all, because I don't. And when I get unteachable, I'm lost, because I'm never going to change, and I got to keep on changing. You know, I don't know if I can stress that enough. I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I got my sponsor, and I got going in AA, and the first thing I did, just wonderfully sick and marvelous, was I met and married another alcoholic. That's wonderful. And it is wonderful, because he's a great guy, he's my best friend, I love him, I admire him, I respect him. He made me laugh, and Karen made me promise I would tell you this story. It's not a whole lot about recovery or anything, but it's a story, and it's his, and it's funny, and it's mine. We had our first Christmas, we had no money. We had $6 in the bank account. He says, I have a present for you. And I'm going, oh no. And so my mind chattered, goes, oh my God, we promised we wouldn't get any presents for each other. And what am I going to do? I didn't get him a present. Oh, I think I'll just go out and make a 12-step call. Go help somebody else. You know, you're sorry for yourself, all this hurt. So he says, just a minute. Now this is all going on in my head in the space of 2 minutes. He goes into the bathroom. We got this one-bedroom apartment. It's got one door and, well, two doors, the bathroom door and the front door. Goes into the bathroom. A few minutes later, he just leaps out of the bathroom like this, stark naked, with a big red bow tied, you know where. And he goes, here comes Santa Claus. He made me laugh. He made me laugh. And what a gift that is. What a gift. Well, that's pretty good anyway. What a gift that was. And is. I love to laugh at myself. You know, I'm so me. And, you know, we get so self-concerned sometimes that, you know, it's like I read about this kid named David, and he was in a bubble. Did you ever read about David? And here we are in the midst of this wonderful, you know, if somebody had come into a bar and said to me, hey, I got this surefire way to set you free. I get this surefire life that'll give you everything you need, everything you want, give you the freedom you've never had. Do you want to do it? And I'd say, man, of course I want to do it. What do I have to do? He'd say, well, you have to take these 12 principles and put them into your life. And I'd say, wait a minute. I would have been so quick to judge that. But here's David, and he's in a bubble. Because he can't live outside the bubble. And he was in there for lots and lots of years. And he made a choice that he would come out of the bubble. And the reason that he wanted to come out of the bubble was because he wanted to feel someone's hand. He had never been touched like that. And every meeting, every place in this whole world where Alcoholics Anonymous has gatherings, we can reach out and we can touch. And it's so hard for us. It's so hard for me to be vulnerable to you. Not as much anymore. But it was always like, if you ever really knew what I was really like, you wouldn't like me. And that was because I didn't really like me either. You know, alcoholics are really addicts with consciences. We know what the difference between right and wrong is. It's just that we've done wrong for so many years. And we're scared. And it's such a privilege to help another human being. And when I'm helped in return, that just makes it even better. I have a story I want to tell you, and I hope I can get through it. I'm almost done. It's a story that was written by Shel Silverstein. And it's called The Giving Tree. And it's about a tree, and it really sums up everything I feel about Alcoholics Anonymous and about you. there was a tree, and it grew up, and its best friend was a boy. And when the boy was young, he used to swing in the branches, and he would eat the fruit from the tree, and the boy was happy, and the tree was happy. And then later, as the boy grew up, he carved his initials into its trunk, and he sat and kissed his girlfriend under its boughs, and he was happy, and the tree was happy. And then the boy wanted to go away, and he said, "Tree, could you give me your fruit that I may buy a place for me in the world outside?" And the tree said, "Certainly." And the boy was happy, and the tree was happy. And the boy came back, and he said, "Could you give me your branches that I may buy a boat, build a boat, and sail away so that I can be happy?" And the tree gave him the branches, and the tree was happy. And the boy came back later, and he said, "I need your trunk, that I may build a house, that I may be happy." And the tree gave him the trunk, and the boy took it away, and the tree was happy. And then the boy was an old, old man, and he came back, and all that was left of the tree was a stump. And the boy said, "Can I sit on your stump? Because I'm tired, and I'm unhappy, and I need a place to rest." And the tree said, "Yes." And the tree was happy. That's Alcoholics Anonymous to me. Thank you for the privilege of sharing with you. Nice.